Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast, a special Ignite Build edition of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 76, being recorded on the 7th of May, 2015. I'm Sujit DeMello, and on Skype for Business with me, I have Kale Teeter and Evan Basilek. Now, Kale's over at Ignite, right, Kale, at this time? You're still there?
Yep, in Chicago.
Great. And I believe you had a session on one of the certification classes there. How did that go?
Yeah, it was good. It was a good turnout. Lots of people getting a lot of certification. I was manning some of the posts down there at the MCT booth, which was basically where everybody comes to do certification. And so I saw all the traffic coming through there, presented a session on 532, so the Azure Dev Exam. We did all the Azure exams there, prep material, and we also did some of the Windows 2012 server, a bunch of other ones. But good times.
So I believe it's a huge event, right? There's just a lot of people. This is the what used to be TechEd, correct?
Yeah, I think they actually like combined a couple of these things. TechEd is the biggest one, but there was a couple other like small conferences, and I think Ignite is meant to kind of replace those. And yeah, I think the total today, they said it was around 23,000 was the attendance there.
Goodness me, 23,000. You know, when we go to Tech Ready in Seattle, I get really amazed with our 6,000 or 7,000 of us. This is 23,000. It's a different ballgame altogether. that's amazing. And Evan, how was your camp, your Azure boot camp?
It was the boot camp. Not this past weekend. No,
a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, this past weekend. Was
it
the 25th? Yeah, so just this past weekend. It was great. We had 50 plus people. We had 80 some people signed up. We had 50 plus show up, and we had a great time. We had breakfast, we had lunch, and we had a lot of good speakers, and everybody had a great time doing it. Because we're geeks and we measure everything. We even had surveys.
Nice.
And our surveys came back good. Actually, the one that I thought was the best was someone said, that you need two tracks because they said there's more stuff they want to learn and there just wasn't enough time in one track to cover everything. So I think we're going to try and do it again maybe in 6 months or six months, have another boot camp, not necessarily a global one, but have another boot camp and, see if we can get two tracks going at that point.
Oh, and since we're talking about Build and Ignite, I should just mention that there is a Build tour that's scheduled where they're doing these, I guess, compressed one-day Build events, right, in different cities around the world.
Yeah.
So if you go to Build Windows, I think there's a link over there where you can register for one of these events, either in-person events. I know there's a few of us from my customer are going to the one in New York, which is the one closest to where we are at. I'm sure they have some in
There's one in Atlanta.
Atlanta.
This way. So I'm sure some folks in there are going. I think it'd be a lot of fun to go to. I don't know that I'm going to get to.
Yeah, I'm just saying for our listeners, just look around and see if there's one nearby you and where you get kind of a compressed Build edition, Build presentations all in one day.
Yeah,
so
just
a whole lot of announcements. Just amazed at the amount. I'm just still digesting all the information from Build and Ignite. I think this is the most amount of information, most number of releases or announcements they've made for Azure in a short period of time, as far as I can recall.
That's starting to become the norm. Every time there's a conference, it's like, I don't think they could put any more in a session like this, and then the next one's bigger. It's crazy.
I think for at least for Build, I think it's safe to say that data was the king right? There were a lot of data-related announcements. Evan, you're normally in the data space. What did you think about that? Some of the data lake and the data warehouse and the Elastic database.
Yeah, no, it looked the Elastic database stuff, really caught my attention because I remember the, I don't know about remembering, but the sharding days, while really powerful, were quite painful, as well. And so to see us kind of really have some real flexibility there is cool. The data warehouse one, I'm trying to get my head wrapped around exactly what that is. I mean, it looks like on the first pass, like we actually will give you, it's like SQL Azure data warehouse, right? And you get all the benefits of SQL Azure, and that kind of flexibility, but you get a true data warehouse there, which, man, I don't even know what it took to implement that. I want to go digging in that.
I mean, it's
Is that?
essentially it's a parallel the PDW, right? Parallel data warehouse is what it
Yeah.
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that based on like IaaS technology, at least for the SQL part of it, or
I
is it Azure SQL?
honestly don't know. That's actually, I'd love to go do some digging around and see if I can track down somebody that's working on that and, talk to them and see, get them on the show and see what they can share. Because yeah, it sounds, I'm really interested in that, is to find out what they can share about how they actually implemented it on top of the layers we have today.
Would it have to be based on the base IaaS instance of SQL, correct?
It doesn't have to be. I mean, if you think about it, Azure SQL Database these days with the version 12, right, has something like, I don't know, 98, 99% feature parity with SQL Server, right? So you could certainly imagine that they're doing that on top of Azure SQL Database instead of SQL Server.
Oh, I see
Yeah,
what
but
you mean.
definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I was super excited. I think it was, I don't know if it was build or which one it was, but we have the TDE now, right? So it's in preview form, the transparent data encryption, which
Yeah.
is customers, I know a lot of customers were asking about that, so.
You mean
Yep.
the client side data encryption? Is that what you're talking about?
No. This is
This.
transparent data encryption at SQL Server. So, they don't have to change their app. Basically, it will handle all that for you with certificates.
Got it.
But it was tough to implement in the multi-tenant mode, right?
And is that the thing that uses the Key Vault, the new key, the Vault service?
It might under the covers. I don't know that the TDE is nice because the instance basically manages the key for you, right?
Yep.
You don't have to do anything to do that or manage that.
Yeah, to your point, what you were just saying, we had that other announcement. I think you had it a little lower here, but it was the client-side
That's what I'm
encryption.
thinking. Yeah,
Yep.
that's for sending up
For
data
storage.
to for
Yeah.
storage, right? You can upload blobs and all, but you can encrypt it before you send it up, and not
Yeah, so
have to
essentially
rely
the
on HTTPS or something like that.
Yeah, but also the keys aren't up there, right? They're not
Yeah.
even in the portal. They're external.
Exactly. All right. So that's all right. Great. That's good to hear all that. So just I guess recap what we just talked about. This Azure Data Lake, that was, I think, the most newest. I don't think we've ever had something even in the IaaS space, in the on-premises space in this area, right? Where you can just have this huge amount of storage space available to you, as if like where you could put all your unstructured data. And the whole point of that, from what I have read, is that today, a lot of people take unstructured data and then they process it into a structured form and then store that, and then they get rid of the unstructured data, right? And what happens, I mean, that's done for the purposes of reducing the amount of space that you use. But the problem is that you also might lose some of the important information that you didn't think of the first time around when you process that data. Maybe a few weeks later, you say, oh, if we had pulled out this additional piece of information from that unstructured data, we might have got some more insight. And what the data lake, from what I've heard, lets you do is it lets you keep all that unstructured data unstructured, just store it within the Azure Data Lake system, and then you can, every time you need to run a job, you could just go back and get all those all that data, all that unstructured data, and process it with HDInsight. Essentially, it's it uses HDInsight or Hadoop. It mimics the HDFS file system, so HDInsight or Hadoop can directly read it, and you can run HDInsight jobs on that over a period of time. Not have to worry about, oh, I need to delete this information because it's taking up too much space or something like that.
I mean, let's be honest though, guys, right? This is the first thing that I thought about when I was reading about this and hearing about it is, what has changed in our world so fundamentally that we, you know, Azure storage as it is today, you know, table storage and blob storage is basically unlimited and it's huge. And now we have this daylight because we're saying, well, if you really have even bigger than that, right? I mean, and I personally, I'm struggling trying to get my head around, like, how big is big that data lake is what you need? I mean, like what's after this, like data ocean? I mean, like, I mean, I guess that maybe I data just don't continents. Have the experience, but like, I mean, how, I mean, are we talking like, I know you can do bigger files, but is this where, is data lake really for people that have, you know, tens and thousands of terabytes? Is that kind of where we're going at? Or
I'm wondering too, is it some class of storage that allows it to be processed, but maybe not at the same kind of rate that Azure storage, so you can maybe have more for less? I don't know. I don't know that to be true, but I'm just wondering, is that where that's at? Or
well, yeah, I mean, this says high frequency, low latency, right? Yeah, real time stuff. So
see, this is one of the requirements when you run a Hadoop MapReduce job. One of the requirements or recommendations of Hadoop is that the data that is being processed is on a local disk, okay, literally attached to the computer. And that is not, I mean, so then you're kind of limited in how much you can do, right? That's why they copy stuff in there, they process it, and then they delete it, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they do the next batch and so on and so forth. I think what they're saying here is that you don't have to do that now. You can just keep your data here permanently, and Hadoop can read it, right, and process it and still run your MapReduce jobs directly off that data lake. That is how I understand it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to read more about this. It's is there a preview like soon or something?
Yeah, there is. Looks like.
It says later, this calendar
later this year. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just one of these things that I don't know that there, maybe part of what I'm struggling with is I don't know that there is kind of something, there's an equivalent that I'm used to looking at. Right, like I get Azure SQL Database, and I kind of get Blob Storage, and I get IaaS. Like maybe there really isn't a traditional equivalent to this, which is just part of why I'm having a hard time getting my head wrapped around of, you know, we had unlimited storage before, and now we have hyperscale storage.
But the unlimited storage we had before didn't really give you like a file system. We have the Azure Files, of course, correct? Which I don't know how large that goes, the Azure file system.
It's a couple of terabytes. I mean, and again, maybe that's part of my challenge, right? In the world I kind of have worked in traditionally, a terabyte file was like, oh, crap, how am I going to move this thing? How am I going to manage it?
Right.
Right. And just thinking about custom, and I know there's a class of customers that have this that have, you know, tens and thousands of terabytes. I mean, I get it. I mean, that's an even bigger challenge, but I have a hard time getting my head wrapped around that.
Yep. Someone's got to save the world from Datageddon. It's going to be us, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
Datageddon. I like that. Nicely put. Yeah. And so we already talked about data warehouse. And then there's the Elastic database, right? And I believe we're hoping to get somebody to talk about that on one of the...
Yeah, Stuart's coming, I think.
Stuart's coming on probably hopefully next week. So we'll kind of save that for the show. Suffice to say that. And now this word Elastic, I know Amazon uses it a lot, right? They kind of seem to have almost patented the word Elastic. And it just implies that it can grow infinitely. Is that what it is? Is that what it means?
Well, I think it's grow and shrink
is
the point. Yeah. You know, that was the big problem with sharded databases, which is you could grow them, you could split them, but there really wasn't the technology to merge them back down. So you couldn't have you could have an expanding data set, but you couldn't have a truly elastic one.
You know, I wonder if this Elastic database is a direct knock on, say, the NoSQL databases, right? Because they always claim to be able to scale up and scale down at will. I wonder if this is kind of like, you know, the SQL version of NoSQL database, just giving you that possibility.
Well, I mean, my understanding is, and like I said, it'll be really cool to talk to Stuart next week, but my understanding is that it's truly a structured database, right? It's a structured format. It's just, it has the ability to, you know, split and shard and everything and then unshard, I don't know if that's the right word, your database after you're done scaling out, yeah. Right? You can scale back down. So, but yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to talking to them about that.
All right,
this week.
We'll save that for Stuart then. And then the other piece of interesting news, this was the ARM for IaaS. You guys caught that piece of information there? I think this was announced in Build, I think. And now what this means is that you could use the Azure Resource Manager and create these JSON, I think they're JSON files, right? Or are they scripts or files? How do you call them? They're just definitions? They're actually JSON scripts, file, right?
Because you can do like looping and some of the other stuff in it as well. So I guess it is technically a script from that aspect.
And now we've had ARM from before, right? But so what's new here? The fact that we can manage IaaS as well?
We're trying to build it into. So we've had ARM, but it was really kind of, I think, leveraging some of the old technology that we had underneath the covers. I think now we're completely rethinking the way that we do this so that, we can truly build this templatized approach for everything, right? If you look, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look, but I was poking around, like there's already tons and tons of templates on GitHub already, as well as on the Azure.com for these, scenarios.
You mean ARM templates? Is that what it didn't mean?
And so I'm trying to get my head wrapped around exactly the distinction between ARM and the resource providers that we talk about that are doing some of this stuff.
And I wonder how does this work with like Chef? Because starting to play around with that a lot more, and customers are looking for it. And in that respect, they're looking to say, I want to build a template, essentially a recipe. I think they call it in Chef, to say, I want to install this VM, and I want to put SQL Server on it, and this is the way I want to configure that kind of thing. Go. Is this just like the Azure part of it? So like saying, okay, I want a storage account, a cloud service, and a VM. Go.
I think it is to some extent, although I think, and this is what I was looking at when I was looking at some of the templates, I need to kind of poke around. But like there's templates for DCs. Right, which would imply that you're maybe getting into some power state or desired state configuration stuff.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can drive the
that line.
OS as
yeah.
well.
And cool. Can Chef and Puppet, can they actually manage NICs and load balances? Well, I don't think so. Right. They primarily are meant for the apps running inside of the IaaS instance.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
I think this is the difference. ARM can do that and also manage, the other Azure assets, right? The load balancers, the NICs, the security, and so on and so forth. I think it's an all-in-one solution from that perspective.
Yeah, I was just wondering if, like, when this is kind of done or when it gets more flushed out, will this just work with Chef? Like to say, this will build out your Azure assets and all that stuff, and then this other piece will install the apps and configure
Absolutely.
All that stuff.
Yeah. Totally expect
I think that's
that.
Part of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we are very close partners with the Chef guys, and so I know that we will.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so we'll put some links to all of this information in the show notes. But I think it's safe to say that the biggest surprise news of all, and which was announced at Ignite, I think, on the first day, was the Azure Stack. I had no idea this was coming down the pike. Perhaps, you guys are maybe closer.
No, I knew
it was coming in.
I think this one was kept pretty close. In hindsight, somebody I know was hinting at that they knew this was coming and was going to impact me. I had not heard. I think this was kept pretty quiet.
I guess in a quick sentence, Azure Stack essentially gives you both IaaS and PaaS services inside of a customer's data center. We've had the Azure Pack before, right? And we have spoken to some guys on the show about it. And that was primarily around IaaS and websites, I think. That's all you could do with Azure Pack. But Azure Stack, you can do most of the PaaS services as well as the traditional IaaS services as well on it. So this just really looks to to fill a niche that personally I've been, I think I mentioned it on the show before, how, you know, companies like Appendra or Cloudera are coming in and doing a lot of stuff in this space, in private cloud space, and we've never had anything to show for it. And I'm glad that they finally announced this.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, like you were saying, right, the thing that really caught my attention, and I'm really curious to play with this and figure out, you know, how well it actually works and, you know, how much does the marketing match with the reality. But if you look at what we're talking about, it's about you have the same template that you can use everywhere.
Hmm.
Right? So, hey, I'm doing my QA in my lab and I'm doing it through on premises Azure Stack, and then I'm ready to go to production.
Yeah,
push it over to Azure Cloud, and now I can scale it up, scale down, right?
And you mean the same ARM template, right? That's what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and so I don't even have to, like, I can't screw up my new configuration, right? Well, because I'm using the same exact template.
So the use cases for this are, one is if you just want a complete private cloud infrastructure, right? And you don't want to have anything to do with the public crap. So that's one obvious use case for this. The second one is more of a hybrid approach, as you just mentioned, where you're deploying some things locally, but you've always got the cloud as either a disaster recovery backup or an expansion facility in case you run short of capacity on premises. So are those kind of the main use cases for somebody using, because the parity is there, right? It will be there. It will be the same templates, as you said, that they deploy on both the on-premises and the cloud. And, you know, I don't know if they made any announcements about the kind of portal or the UI that's going to be used, be provided, but I'm assuming there'll be a very familiar UI based on what we see today with the Ibiza portal.
Yeah.
So you know, and it's, I think the whole idea is to give that impression that you've got your own Azure.
Yeah. No. And did you guys notice, like, and maybe I missed this, but we snuck in somewhere that it's now going to be Windows Server 2016.
Yes. It's going to be part of Windows Server 2016, or like an addition to that, right?
Yeah. But I hadn't even heard it called Windows Server 2016 yet, so maybe I just missed that. But I kind of got
point,
two for one
point
on this announcement.
Yeah. So that's the Windows 10 kind of version of the server, correct?
So Windows 10 kernel with the server in the
stuff.
Server flavor, I guess. Yeah, server stuff.
it'll
be interesting to see. I actually, you know, I was thinking about this the other day with I probably need to track down, like, somebody that's hardcore OS and find out you know, now that today everything is features, what is the real difference between Windows client and Windows server?
Yeah.
I mean, they're the same kernel now, and everything's just features you add and remove, but, and you can make a server build look like a client build, right? You turn on the user experience, I think it is, but, like, I don't know what's actually different about the two anymore. Is it just what we drop on top of it or not? I don't know.
Well, traditionally, it's always been very similar, right? The main OS have been fairly similar, the DLLs, because, you know, apps do run on both, right? There are some apps that you can run on, like, as a developer, we develop on our desktops and just push it out to the server and it works, right?
Yeah.
So there's always been that level of parity. Of course, the main, some of the whole performance aspects of it were always different on the server side. There were limits on what you could do on the client in terms of the number of connections or the number of threads or those kind of things. They are most suited for client workloads.
But it used to be there were actually two different kernels, though, as well, right? I mean, it was the same interfaces into them, but it was two. But these days, it's like, I don't know if either you guys do, like, debugging in a debugger, like the WinDBG or CDM or those guys, or CDB, excuse me. It used to be that you could, if you look at your OS version, you could tell whether you were on a server or a client OS because they were actually different.
Different.
Starting with, I don't know, 2012 maybe, you could be on a Windows 7 machine or a 2012 machine, and when you look at the OS or the kernel, it would show up as the same exact thing. You could not tell the difference.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there was like some stuff around .NET too. I mean, there used to be. I don't know how much this, if this has changed much, but .NET was actually tweaked too, right? The garbage collector, so it ran different on server versus client.
Right.
Yeah.
I know from the .NET perspective, doing it in WinDBG, you had to load one SOS or the other.
Yeah.
If you do the debugging.
Yeah. I just don't know. It feels you know, especially with, you know, as we talk about Windows Update for Business and stuff, where we're starting to like deliver these pieces kind of in a rolling fashion. It, you know, it just, I don't know. I'm going to have to go track down like somebody, a hardcore OS person, and kind of ask them. Because it feels more like it's a config difference than a build difference.
Sounds like a Mark Rusinovich kind of question. I'm sure he'll be all over that one.
Yeah, we'll get him on the show. No problem. I'll get him on next time.
Exactly.
It'd be great to have him on the show, but I don't think he has the time for our show. Kale, there was something you wanted to share with us about some interesting customer that you've been doing some work with.
Yeah. So the one technology that I'm starting to get more involved with that's pretty exciting, is cool, is the Power BI stuff. So we've had this product for a while. We've had this kind of client that you could build templates basically to set up your Power BI on, you know, on premises, this kind of thing. And then now we're getting into this thing where we have this Power BI portal. It's in like preview form. So it's basically all web-based, and you can come up here and basically define data sources. And we should get somebody on to talk about the details of this, but it's really cool stuff. Basically, you can grab data from places, and you can build these dashboards and have it reach out and refresh itself to do these analytical type solutions kind of on the fly without even Visual Studio involved, which is pretty awesome. And the reason I was involved with it is because we have this customer who we had at Ignite, which was, it was really awesome. So they're in Tacoma, Washington, and they're basically attempting to set a couple land speed records. So one is the woman's record, which is like mid 500s. So that's going to happen here relatively soon with this car. And then after that, they're trying to break the speed of sound, which is roughly around 760 miles an hour. The computer models that they've generated right now say they can go 835. But really cool. I mean, they got a lot of support from different vendors like Lenovo and all these different research, you know, that build all the telemetry type things on the car. And the cool thing, how we got involved with it, was we actually helped them kind of grab all this data. What was actually happening was they would go out and do these runs in the desert to practice or to test this stuff, and they can't just, like, you know, drop the hammer and hope that it works because, you know, there could be problems. It's pretty dangerous stuff. So they have to have a lot of models around this, around the physics of the car and what's happening with it, the vibration, the wheels, and all this kind of thing. So they got a ton of sensors on this car measuring everything from air density to temperature, vibration, pressures, all these things. And so what they would do is go do a run. They would collect this mountain of data. They would literally put it on a hard drive and ship it to California, to Silicon Valley, to a Cray supercomputer, do a bunch of analysis on it, get it back, and start making determinations. Okay, we can go faster if we do this safely. And what we did was basically cut that piece out. So now they can take that data, bring it up to Azure, and we can run the same algorithms that they had against it. And in a matter of minutes, or even, you know, some cases hours for the deeper stuff, but in minutes we can tell them whether it's safe to continue on and change these couple things. And then when they get back home, they can actually, you know, go deeper into it. But the goal is to help them go faster while they're going faster.
That's amazing. That's really, really, really amazing. Now, how the data, how do they get it up to Azure? Do they just upload it, or do they use the direct the Azure Direct feature, whatever that is?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We went through a couple different models for that because it's sizable. We're talking anywhere from a couple hundred meg to gigs, and they're out in the desert, like I said, so there's no connectivity, is kind of bad. But what we came up with was how could we optimize that? So we basically went back and looked at it and said, okay, so we wrote a special kind of web portal for them to do this. So they can, on the JavaScript side, what we're doing is actually taking that file, and because it's text data mostly, all this data coming through, it can be compressed a lot. So the first thing we do in JavaScript is actually compress all the data. And then once we have the data compressed, which getting around 50 to 60% there typically is what we see on a compression rate, then break it up into the chunks, and then we can use some of the HTML5 components that have come along to actually kind of multi-thread upload. So we can specify like 10 uploads at once and get that stuff into blob storage as fast as possible. Still not breaking any physics or anything there, but you know, when we get maybe 60% compression rate through all these things I'm talking about, it's you know, half the time. So
nice. So it's all done pretty much in real time then, more or less. You just send it up, process it, you get rid of the feedback right away.
Yeah, we have a couple things we're still adding to it, but basically we want to try to do it through the mobile, so basically they could upload it and go do what they need to with the car and actually be pinged on their phone with some of the key metrics and then continue on, and then later you could go back and look at the dashboard and Power BI to see all the other things.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Now, you know, somebody... Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, Scale, how did you manage to get in on something this cool and neat? Right place, right time, or?
Yeah, I guess just knew the right people, and some guys in Redmond knew me, and then said, hey, I got this cool project, and it's kind of a little out there. Let's see what we can do here.
Wait a minute, let me say that. It's a little out there, so they thought of Kale.
It's just like, there's no structure here, we're just going to see, what do you think, and let's see what we can do. So it's been pretty cool, but they had that car on the show floor. It was pretty awesome. A lot of people, a lot of interest there. It was interesting to see it, and they made a whole promo video and stuff. It's on the net. We can go ahead and send that up. I was humbled, man. This morning it was on the front page of Microsoft.com. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Well, that is pretty cool.
That is nice. Now, what I was going to say is that somebody ought to talk to the NASCAR folks about this, because this is stuff that they can use too, right, to get this real-time processing and tweak their cars and things like that.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they are. I in my previous life, I worked for a company that sold 3D CAD modeling software to the NASCAR places, because they're all down there, right? 50 miles in my house, right?
Yeah.
Those places are incredibly high tech. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're in this. I'll have to ask around and see if anybody knows, you know, if there's some information that we've got or anybody can share on what they're doing, and are they using some of these cool technologies? You know, I want to say that I've heard some rumors of it, but I don't know any specifics I'll ask around and see. That would be cool.
Nice. That's a nice story, Kale. So anything else exciting going on Ignite while you're there, Kale?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. This is the first time I've been to one of these public events. Typically, I go to our internal ones, but the external one's neat because kind of the expo center where basically all our partners are there, so Barracuda, you know, everything. Splunk was there, those guys. So talking to those guys about what they're doing with Azure in the future. It's cool to see all that stuff because, you know, as consultants, we get a lot of the customers not always just using everything that Microsoft has. They use other products as well, and they need to see how those are going to integrate. So it was cool to kind of interact with all those different vendors and see what they're doing with the future things in Azure.
Yeah, so the important question is, you know, I was watching the keynote, and you know, they gave out all these hardware. Did you score some hardware, Kale, or no?
I don't know who's given hardware out. I didn't get any.
No, I've been to build before. My employees don't get anything.
You're lucky we set you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wish we would have seen a HoloLens. We didn't see that at Ignite, but
that would have been cool to see in person. Yeah.
And on Build, they had a whole bunch of them, the HoloLens. I was quite impressed with that, although there was some concern about the field of vision, which has been reduced on the HoloLens. But yeah, Hopefully they'll tweak on that. But it's nice they've got that nice and light, and it's fairly portable.
Did you get a chance to actually try one on, Sajid, or?
No, I was just watching the videos and listening to some of the people who actually have tried it give direct feedback. It was kind of you're not allowed to take cameras and anything like that, right? In these sessions, they strip you of everything. Well, not everything, but they take all your gadgets. They take all your gadgets, and then you go into this room where you have a two-hour demo with your own HoloLens, but it's all basically you got to remember everything
Yeah,
and then
okay.
you know memorize it. So people have been, through other podcasts, people have been giving us feedback on what they experienced.
Yeah.
Seems pretty nice.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for one of those to kind of make its way through our site, right? Because my, I've got, you guys are, I guess you guys mostly work out of your office or your customer, but like we've actually got about 1,000 people at my
Right.
site. I'm hoping they, because where there's enough of us there, that maybe they'll bring, one of those through so we can actually kind of, see it and stuff. It'd be kind of neat. So.
You forgot the biggest news, Sajid. I think, wasn't it a build? We announced the name of the browser.
Oh, yeah. Go
Oh,
ahead.
that's true.
Well, what is it your name now?
What starts with an E? It has to.
It has to start with an E, right? Yeah. This is the old, what used to be called the Spartan browser, correct? Or Project Spartan, I guess that's what they call it, not the Spartan browser. And now it's called the Edge. Is that, if I remember right, is that the name?
Yeah, Edge. Yep, I think is what I
Edge.
saw.
That was smart keeping it E because a lot of people are familiar with that letter, at least when they're looking for the browser. So I'm glad they kept that, at least the letter
I
is the
just
same.
I, some comedy around that. I thought, now what are they going to call like the plugins or things? Are they going to be wedges? Like wedges for Edge?
Of course, there's gonna
Oh.
be wedges right after that. I know that, but never mind.
Is it, wait a minute, if that if those are wedges, does the wedgies mean that they're the malware, right?
That would be awesome. I think we just told the future right here. I mean,
That's
that's what.
right. You heard it here, folks. All
Okay, on
right,
that note,
that's.
we probably ought to stop before we go any
Yeah, I
further.
know. Yeah, it's deteriorating just a little bit right now. But that was good. Good recap, guys. Thank you. And Tail, thanks for the first-hand information from Chicago. And I think we'll hopefully look forward to Stuart next week, and we'll get some first-hand information on the Elastic Azure SQL database.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right,
Awesome.
guys. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay, see you next week.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.